Welcome back to another episode of Frankenstein's on Air, live from Ybor City, and on Hawk Radio, the official radio station of Hillsborough Community College. I almost forgot it there. Today we're going to talk about more movies, but more importantly, my life was just changed by the events that I saw in the Ybor room.
So I need to stop you before you do, before you say anything.
What?
Today's been a great day, and what happened in the Ybor room bolstered that so much.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, it was a good day. Now it's a great day. So
for those who don't know, HCC grabbed a random crack addict off the street and put him in the Ybor room and said, "Hey, perform, do some magic tricks, guys."
That guy.
That's not true. That's not. That's slanderous.
That guy had some. Oh my.
There was some magician, entertainer guy. I think he's made for children, but I'm a children, so. Apparently he played in the White House. His name was like John Cassidy or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
He had such charisma. This guy.
Funny.
This guy was funny. He knew how to perform. I loved that
he
so
did
much.
Card tricks. He did other tricks. He was funny. He made a joke about babysitting Joe Biden, and I clapped my hands and I said,
He made a joke about being able to throw hammers at kids in the 1970s, and I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, a couple of fake hammers that he threw at someone. They looked real. So HCC let some random guy come in and throw hammers at all the students, and that was really cool.
That's awesome, and I think honestly, I need this to happen weekly. I need every class.
If they had a how to do magic tricks class, I would enroll in that.
I need him to come into the next broadcasting techniques class and just replace Mr. Wirtz.
Don't do Mr. Wirtz like that. Shout out Mr. Wirtz.
I love Mr. Wirtz. He's a great teacher. I'm just saying, like, I want this guy weekly.
I think Mr. Wirtz would understand. Anyways, I'm in an angsty mood today. So we got all the songs lined up for you. We'll be back talking about movies and stuff, you know, like we always do. But coming up first, I have a nice relaxing song called Chemical Warfare by the Dead Kennedys. See you guys in a few minutes.
Oh!
Welcome back.
I am so like I think midway through that song, I was like, okay, I can clock out mentally. I don't need to be here. That was crazy. That's the kind of, that's what my brain sounds like when I'm like alone in a room by myself for way too long.
It's... Go listen to more of the Dead Kennedys, guys. That was Chemical Warfare by the Dead Kennedys. Shout out John F. Shout out Robert. Though not the one that's still around, just the one that died.
Yeah. Wait, do we not like the one that's still around?
He has worms in his brains.
Oh, well, of course. Yeah, of course. I thought you were talking about, like, I don't know. I was being stupid for a second. Yeah, he does have worms in his brain.
Anyways, yeah, so Chemical Warfare and horror films or regular films of another genre variety. Sorry, I shouldn't do that right in the mic. What have you watched recently?
Well, you know what I've watched recently. I talked to you about it. And I watched John Carpenter's They Live.
Oh, right. Yeah, and it's a great movie.
It's awesome. It's so much fun. I had a blast watching it.
I built this sign in Minecraft.
Oh, really?
I built a big sign that says Obey because I made a city that runs off currency and it's capitalist and stuff.
That's awesome.
For the uninformed at home, They Live is a movie by John Carpenter made in 1982, 81.
I think it's 82.
I think, yeah, it's definitely his first film after The Thing.
Yeah. It has some of that cast.
It does. It really feels like it should be a Kurt Russell film, but it's not. It really feels like that role was made for Kurt Russell, but it wasn't him.
I feel like they must have approached him and he said no, because the guy who plays him, or plays the main character, I forget
he's
who.
He's got Kurt Russell vibes.
He's got very Kurt Russell vibes.
I forget his name too, but he does a good job in it.
He does.
I shouldn't do that in the mic. So the film is about a guy who finds a box of sunglasses, and you put the sunglasses on, you can see that half the population is aliens, and everything that we see, all the newspaper ads, the television commercials, the propaganda posters are all really just propaganda from the aliens to keep us, you know, subdued and to obey and consume and buy product. And vote and
all that
for
stuff.
More aliens. And the aliens are all the ruling classes, and the aliens are the hosts on TV. The aliens are even the radio show hosts. Yeah. And I'm neither confirming nor denying any allegations against me, but it is a very good movie.
I want to point out, I love the alien makeup.
It's a documentary as well. It's real.
It's real. The alien makeup so much. It's so simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's so simple, but it's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
They all look like Day of the Dead character, like, you know, they kind of got that vibe going, but I still love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much fun. I was like, very rarely do I have a movie where I'm like, I'm so locked in that like I'm on the edge of my seat. Like when I go watch a movie, I'm locked in, but I'm still just sitting there, you know, enjoying the story. But this one, I was like, I was getting closer to the screen. I just had to like be there. It was awesome. It was so cool. I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
I agree. And it's more like an action thriller, I guess. It's not horror, but it's got that like 50s horror like homage vibe, which there's a lot of films in the 80s that are harking
like
back to the 50s.
Horror themed, but it's not horror.
Yeah, no, because it's an alien invasion movie, but it's about a guy. Anyways, he finds the sunglasses and then he puts them on. He's like, oh my God, everyone's aliens. What am I going to do? And he starts fighting people, shooting people, killing people that are aliens. But because everyone else thinks they're just people, he just looks like he's a psychopath running around shooting people. But really, he's right.
Yeah. And then he forces Keith David to wear sunglasses in an alleyway.
The idea is now, like, how are we going to stop this alien? How are we going to overthrow our alien overlords if no one knows that the overlords are aliens?
Yeah.
But what I love about this film is that it has such wonderful John Carpenter angst in it. That man is so grumpy.
He is.
He was born an old man, an old grumpy man. I don't think he ever had joy or whimsy in his heart, except for when he's playing Sonic the Hedgehog video games. Fun fact, John Carpenter loves Sonic the Hedgehog. He's a Sonic fan.
I know he plays a lot of games.
He's specifically a Sonic fan. There's a wonderful image of him standing next to a photo of Sonic when he was a werewolf.
From Unleashed. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, he's a huge gamer. No,
that's
but
sick as hell.
John always has, you know, he's very openly spoken against the powers that be, especially in Hollywood, because Hollywood didn't treat him well. And this film, I mean, I don't got to explain to you what the politics of this film are.
It's so obvious.
I think you get the idea.
It was, I have to take a tiny detour for this. I get a little bit upset with these things, but not upset, but just I'm like, oh, okay, really? The thing is, I have the same feeling about this movie that I have with Detroit Become Human, where these stories, they are so obviously one thing. Like, you cannot avoid it, that it's kind of like you could be a little bit more subtle.
I mean, Detroit Become Human, the problem is Detroit Become Human takes itself very seriously, and it's very dramatic, and it's like, I'm howdy-toddy and stuff like that. I disagree in the case of They Live, because They Live is so silly.
Yeah.
And it's like an action movie, so it's like it's so on its nose, and it's so angry, and that's what I love. It's just seeping with anger and parody, and that's why I love that it's so blunt and so on the nose. It's like, of course, and it's. I think in some cases you'd be right. Some things need to be handled more delicately, but in the case of They Live, I think it's perfectly exactly what it needs to be.
I think They Live. I can agree with that. I still think it's a little bit too on the nose for me.
Disagree, no.
But with Detroit Become Human, the androids sit at the back of the bus, and it's like, okay.
That's what I mean. Yeah, but Detroit Become Human is like a drama game.
Yeah, it is, but it's just
This isn't like a drama. It's like taking itself super seriously. This is a movie about a guy who puts on magic sunglasses and shoots aliens.
I think that's a sick premise, though. And I think the way it's done, it's a good movie when a weird premise is like done in a way like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah, that all of that checks out. Yeah, that magic sunglasses, aliens. Yeah,
that's exactly.
But I watched another movie, but we'll get to that after.
No, what did you? Oh wait, is that gonna be your next segment?
Well, no, I'll do the other movie now.
You can pull it up if you want. Yeah, we got time to do it now.
Okay, sorry for the dead air, everybody. I gotta pull up the movie that I watched. Hold on.
I wonder if I could play Dead Babies by Alice Cooper
on the radio show. Maybe.
Probably could.
Okay, so I think I might have talked about this on the show already, but I did watch the latest installment of the VHS franchise, VHS Beyond.
I don't think you did.
Okay, did I not?
Might have, though, so I guess just keep it brief.
Yeah,
Then again, is there anything really extensive to say about VHS?
No, I just wanted to touch on it lightly. It was fine. I think the best one was 99 with Ratma and, you know, all that. I thought that was cool. I think, oh my gosh, the people that did Scream 5 and 6 and Ready or Not, who are they? Radio Silence?
I don't know.
Radio Silence? Is that what they're called? I think they're called Radio Silence. They're a production company. They also did VHS, and it's very good.
Is it good?
Yeah, I would say this one is more so just fine, but the other one, like, bar the first three are kind of whatever. You're not missing anything, but the ones after that, like, four onwards are all decent. I like them. The first one's good. This one was fine. I didn't see anything wrong with it.
Okay.
Yeah, so go watch VHS.
Go watch VHS and definitely go watch They Live. And another thing about They Live, have you seen Big Trouble in Little China?
I have.
Very good film. Go watch Big Trouble in Little China. Not a horror film, but one of John Carpenter's best films. That movie is incredible. Anyways, we'll be back in a little bit. We're going to take a quick little music break here. We have The Idiots Are Taking Over by NOFX, which I think is a very fitting song after the movie we just discussed. See you guys in a little bit.
On evolution, the
The Idiots Are Taking Over by NOFX, and I think we can all, you know, or at least about half of the
population. Is it NOFX or NOFX?
NOFX.
NOFX.
Like NOFX. Anyways, so I guess I'm up next. What am I waiting for?
You're up next. I get to fall asleep now. Good night, everybody.
That's not true. You're going to listen attentively to the things that I have to say.
Of course I am.
Because last week I finally finished my conversation about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and that doubled as our conversation for 70s horror. The 70s were, things got more violent, things got more low budget and independent. Well, that started in the 60s, but it all harkened back to the
Vietnam War. Did we shout out any other 70s horror movies?
Yeah, Hills Have Eyes, Last House on the Left. Okay, yeah. I think I mentioned Black Christmas. Should have mentioned Black Christmas. Anyways, so this film, and not this film, this week we're talking about the 80s, which is kind of like a, you know.
I mean, They Live was the 80s, so.
Yeah, so it's fitting. It's on theme. And the 80s are obviously, I think that's like kind of the definitive era for horror films of the modern age. Mm-hmm. I think before that it would be like the 1930s, 1940s, even the 50s a little bit. I guess, but really the 30s, that's when like Dracula, Frankenstein, The Mummy, that's when things like that were coming out, and that really defined horror movies for like ever and still to this day. But then really in the 80s, we saw all these massive franchises become a thing, and that was really the era of like when movie franchises and sequels were now definitively a thing. Beforehand, those didn't really exist that much. Studios didn't really want to make sequels that often. But then really, I think with Star Wars is really the big one thing that made sequels a thing, and like serialized movies like the Indiana Jones films. Anyways, point being, in the 80s, lots of sequels. In terms of politics, it's a bit harder to generalize. The 70s were much more distinctly, you could see that hippie angst of, you know, the Vietnam War going on and social injustice. But of course, in 1968, Richard Nixon one, the presidential election, and America took a much a swing towards the right and the conservative side of things. So we see a lot of the progressivism take a bit of a sidestep. And I would still say horror films of this era are much more reliant on that what had come before them in the 70s. They definitely take a lot from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Hills Have Eyes, Last House on the Left. They were still a breed of film that grew out of that original hippie movement. And you can see the genetics in the films that come later on. I mean, really, I think this week, or like last week, the 80s are going to be a two-week segment because just today I want to focus on the early 80s, and which is really the moment for the slasher film. The early 80s was when slashers were at their absolute highest.
And I get to talk about my favorite 80s movie, too.
Yeah.
Or my favorite 80s horror franchise, which is Friday the 13th.
Yes, we will talk about Friday the 13th quite extensively. But really, Texas Chainsaw Massacre laid the foundation for the horror, for the slasher film. Psycho is like the granddaddy, but Texas Chainsaw Massacre gave it a formula. Kids getting killed off one by one in horrific ways by a masked maniac with a bladed weapon, never a gun. Halloween comes around in 1978. Now it's not an 80s film, but Halloween is very important for this discussion because Halloween is, even though Texas Chainsaw Massacre is really what started it, Halloween is what kicked it into high gear. Halloween came out, was a massive success, also by John Carpenter. And that is just a film about a guy in a mask with a knife killing teenagers. And that would define horror films for the next 20 years, really.
Oh, yeah.
Its influence is really hard to overstate. And I actually watched Halloween just last night, and just for like probably the thousandth time. And whenever I watch that film now, I feel like you really have to put yourself in the context of the time that it was made in, because a lot of those tropes, a lot of those things, they feel very unoriginal, because they were original at the time, but they feel, from a modern standpoint,
outdated.
I don't want to say outdated. That's too harsh. Nothing new. Because you hear about Halloween, and I think a lot of young people, and they hear Halloween all their life. They're like, Halloween, gotta watch Halloween. That's the horror film you gotta watch. And they go and watch it, and it's like, I don't see anything new about this.
Yeah, it's something that we've seen. It's
the killer never dies. He stabs a bunch of kids, especially in very non-gory ways. And now when you have films like Terrifier, probably expecting Michael Myers to rip someone limb from limb, and really all he does is strangle people and stab someone with absolutely no blood.
Well, I want to say that that's kind of reminiscent, and you're probably going to roll your eyes, but this is reminiscent of what happened with the critically panned found footage genre. I mean, every found footage movie, we know the formula. And yes, you go back and you watch...
It happens with a lot of genres, yeah,
the
formula.
You go back and you watch The Blair Witch, and you're like, oh, this is just, camera drops at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happens the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a found footage film.
Right. I think it happened to the found footage films a little worse than the slashers.
Yeah,
There's much more variety with slashers. But anyways, Halloween, my point is here that when you watch Halloween, I used to be a history major, and so when the history major is going to come out, I love watching that film from a historical standpoint of imagining what it's like and you'd never seen this before. I love especially starting that film. It's just a guy breaks out from mental asylum, and this doctor is going on and on about how he's pure evil. He calls him it all the time. Doesn't call him he or him. And he's talking about that wonderful speech when he's talking about the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes. It's just spooky stuff. And at times it sounds like, is this doctor just crazy? But then slowly as the film goes on, there's that revelation that, oh my God, this guy is more than a man. And that's where like the creepiness comes out. It feels almost surreal as you're watching this man perform unnatural superhuman feats.
We know that he isn't a man because he has a cult. He's obviously a god.
Listen, anyways,
okay.
Disregarding that. So, and then of course the grand finale when he gets shot, falls on the back balcony, and then he's still gone. And then I love the ending where it just shows shots of all the different locations we had seen earlier with Michael's breathing over it, just leaving the audience that one last feeling of he could be anywhere. He could even be in the theater with you.
Yeah.
And it's just so perfect. It's nothing much to write home about in terms of like politics. John Carpenter was just hired to make a horror movie, and that's what he did. It's really a haunted house film of just, scares and stuff. But it's done classy. It's done with a real sense of skill to it, the way John Carpenter handles suspense. And at the time being, again, those tropes of, you know, this the final girl, the killer that never dies and never speaks and only walking is very creepy, a very creepy thing to see. It was great and it was new. And so I think point is watch it with some historical context. And one thing as well, if you want to get a sense of what I mean, a real gem on YouTube. There is an actual recording from the theater in 1979 and our audience's first reaction to Halloween.
Oh.
And it's on YouTube. It's from 1979. Someone recorded it, digitalized it, and uploaded it. And you can hear all this audience yell and scream at that final reveal that Michael is gone. And it's so cool as they're all cheering and having a great time. And that really gives you a sense of just how much of a phenomenon Halloween was. And why it was copied over and over again.
Yeah. Here's the thing. You know, if you get to know Michael Myers outside of the killing part, he's actually a pretty nice guy. Okay. He's kind of progressive too.
He's woke.
So I did want to touch on something. When was The Shining? Was that 70?
80.
That was 80s? Yeah. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But
I wasn't planning on talking about The Shining. I don't really see, I mean, The Shining, it's an 80s film. It's an important one, but I don't really see any lasting impact on what I'm focusing on here.
Oh, I wanted to talk about it because I watched it 2-3 weeks ago, like, and I didn't really.
Do you want to say anything about it right now?
I'll wait. I'll talk about it in a bit. But what I wanted to say was Halloween 2 specifically, did Halloween 2 have the same impact as the first one? Did Halloween 2 do anything? Was it popular with audiences?
Halloween 2 was popular. Halloween, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here because Halloween 2 comes directly when slashers had taken off. So Halloween comes out in 1978, and then after time goes on, people like this is basically a new genre of film, the slasher. The big one was Friday the 13th.
Oh yeah,
it's really a four part step. One, Psycho. The creation of the slasher genre is a 4-step process. One batch of Psycho. Stir with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, a touch of Halloween, and then bake it with Friday the 13th, and then you have a slasher genre. Because Halloween came out, and then it was, it created the formula, and then Friday the 13th added the gore. Mm-hmm. That is the one that was Sean Cunningham, the director, famously said he saw Halloween. He's like, I want to do that. And I think people are a little too harsh on Friday the 13th as being a copycat of or a ripoff of Halloween. I don't think it's fair enough to call it a ripoff because I think it's unique enough to be its own thing. It's a slasher film, and slasher films are very simple. And so from that regard, you could say it's a ripoff of Halloween. But like, if Friday the 13th is a ripoff, then any slasher film that has ever come out is a ripoff.
I think people just don't. I try to talk to people about Friday the 13th a lot, and like I actually really like that first one.
I do too. People are a little too harsh on
it
nowadays.
People are like, Friday the 13th 1 and 2 are terrible. They're so
2 is
bad.
Usually a little...
Like, they're so awful, and...
2 is usually beloved, I see.
Well, I see a lot of people dislike it, and I'm like,
I need to hurry up because I am getting a little over. So my point is here, Friday the 13th came out, and the difference was it's a film about a kids at a summer camp is the big innovation here, somewhere secluded, but this time they hired Tom Savini to do all the gore effects, and so all the kills in this one, even if it's not, the plot is not nearly as good as Halloween, even if the acting isn't as good as Halloween, and even if the camera work is not as skilled as Halloween, this had some insane gore effects for the time being. They're pretty tame by today's standards, but for 1980, it was shocking. And teenagers loved it, and young adults loved it, and people watched it, and they'd have fun seeing these horrifying kills. And that really kicked off the slasher genre, because then Friday the 13th was this low-budget film with basically no plot and no budget, and that was like, hey, all these low-budget filmmakers, like, we can do this. And so then you get The Burning, you get My Bloody Valentine, Prom Night, Slumber Party Massacre, and Prom Night. I've merged those into one thing.
When was Sleepaway Camp?
That was also this era. It's early 80s, maybe 82, 83. Yeah. Sleepaway Camp, that's one. And so point being, you see hundreds of these low budget slasher films coming out. And another important thing with the 80s is the rise of video stores. Because 10 years before this, 20 years before this, these films could not, this whole movement of slasher films could not have existed because they're so low budget. They would not have extensive, they would have theatrical releases, but that's not where they would thrive. Where they would thrive would be on the aftermarket in the horror section with these very gratuitous VHS covers that would catch kids' eyes and stuff, and they'd want to go watch it behind their parents' backs. That is where they thrived the most. And so that's a very important thing to mention for this era.
Yeah, and I think a lot of these horror movies, I think that's so important. Like, video stores do not get enough credit for what they did for
half of
the genres. That,
like, oh, yeah, not just horror. They were impactful for everything.
Like, so many genres would have never thrived if it wasn't for the rise of video stores. I think that they, and when we start covering the 90s, I have a segment planned for that,
mm-hmm.
and we'll touch back on it.
The video store was a great equalizer for film. It made it much easier to get your low budget film, for better or worse, out there for audiences to see, because you didn't have to go through the big studio. Well, you have to go through the studio system still, but not quite as much.
And that's another thing, is like people back, like I remember, you know, Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
I was listening to his podcast a while ago, and on it he said, you know, his co-host said that back when he was a kid, you know, you would buy like one movie and you'd watch it over and over again.
Mm.
And you knew that movie. It was like a good
song.
And
you learned it. And yeah, a lot of directors from this era that were growing up at this era, like Quentin Tarantino and stuff like that, they were watching these films on DVD over and over. They studied them and they learned how to do these films.
Yeah.
So it's very important. Anyways, a few more things to say about the 80s before, because I got more to say. We'll be doing more about this. I'll go more into the politics next week, I think, because one thing we see a lot in the 80s as well is gore effects. Practical effects at this point had reached a point where... and also censorship laws had weakened to a point where in the early 80s, you see a rise in gore effects. More realistic, more bloody, more gory. It almost started like Friday the 13th kind of started a nuclear arms race of gore, because after that, every film had to be bloodier. Every film had to be more gory. And that still has a lasting impact today, because now the films of the early 80s aren't that shocking anymore, because the arms race has progressed to a point where now we are on to Terrifier 3 and we're watching, you know, women be sawed in half. And so that arms race is still in motion, and I don't see how it can go much farther.
I don't think it can go much farther without being snuff, honestly.
More or less.
Yeah.
But anyways, so we see that in the 80s as well. Even like some of the later Friday the 13th films at the end of the 80s, Dwarf, or maybe the middle of the 80s, Dwarf, the early 80s films. Towards the middle, like 1985, that's when the MPAA started cracking down on these films. So in the later half of the 80s and the early 90s, you see actually less gore in these movies because they were not allowed to do it.
Was that when Al Gore's wife?
Yes.
Oh, with like Twisted Sister and
whatnot?
Yes,
that's when also Al Gore's wife, Tipper Gore, was trying to get metal music banned for a similar reason, because they were afraid of it corrupting the youth, because as I mentioned earlier, the 80s were a time of rising conservatism.
And satanic panic and whatnot.
Yeah, in fact, even one movie in the early 80s, one of this part of this genre of Friday the 13th wave of slasher mania was Silent Night, Deadly Night.
I love that movie.
There's wonderful images. If you look up the protest of Silent Night, Deadly Night, there's Christians protesting saying, Santa is sacred. Don't play this on the, take this slop off our movie theater marquees. And it worked. The film got pulled from many, many theaters, and it did not make a profit because of that. And that is why, if you know Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, that's the one with, the guy says,
Garbage Day.
Yeah, that's where that comes from. But if you ever watch that film, half of that movie is just reused footage from the first
film. Yeah,
That is why, because they lost money on the making of the first movie, that they basically tried to re-release it with part two, because they made the first movie and lost money because these protesters got it pulled from theaters. That is why it's like that.
Okay, so I have on my Letterboxd, I have 3 movies rated at a half star. Okay, I don't give a lot of movies a half star. If I don't like it, I'll give you a 1 star. I have 3 movies at a half star. I have Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. I have The Grudge 3, American.
Mm-hmm.
And Silent Night, Deadly Night 4, Initiation.
That sounds about right.
this Silent Night, Deadly Night franchise, I don't care that, like, I don't care about, like, I'm so glad it exists. I love that franchise. And I just had to say that out loud. Mm-hmm. Silent Night, Deadly Night is amazingly bad.
Good to know. But what else was I going to say? I got so many things in my brain, guys. So gore. And another thing, too, with this rise of, like, this gore going on, and also sequels. Every movie needed a sequel.
Oh, yeah. Every movie needed
a sequel. What does Stu say in Scream? Let's face it, this day, baby. These days, you gotta have a sequel.
Yeah.
No slasher film was good. If the killer never actually died, he'd be back in the sequel. And even if some movies weren't popular enough to get a sequel, like maybe My Bloody Valentine didn't get a sequel, they all end with sequel bait. That also means that things are getting more ridiculous. By part 6, Jason Voorhees is being resurrected as a zombie, you know?
Yeah.
Things get more fantastical towards the later half of the 80s. And because of this also, there's so much gore, things get kind of silly. And in the 80s, because of this, you see the rise of the horror comedy.
Oh, I was just about to mention.
Which is the natural extension of this nuclear arms race. Things are going so crazy that it goes into parody. And that's where you get, like, Evil Dead 1 is definitely, it's not a slasher, but it's definitely part of this rise of hyper-gory, early 80s films. And it was inspired by Halloween to an extent, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I think Bruce Campbell explicitly states in that book I mentioned, Chainsaw Confidential, yeah, Texas Chainsaw was a huge inspiration. Even though different genres, they're still low-budget, gory, kind of gory films.
And what's great about Evil Dead is you had Evil Dead 1 in 1981, and then at the end of the 80s, you got Evil
Dead
2.
That's what I'm saying. You can see in that early 80s versus the late 80s, you can see that shift in dynamic. Yeah, Evil Dead 2 is much, it's a parody. It's a comedy. And then another great example is Texas Chainsaw Massacre 1, which is like the birth of the genre, of the slasher genre.
Yeah.
And then Tobe Hooper reflected. And when he made Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 in 86, at the height, the pinnacle of the genre, it's a parody. He's reflecting on the genre that he helped create,
mm-hmm,
and he's looking at where it's come, and he's looking at all the films around him that are inspired by his movie, like Halloween 4, Jason Lives, Nightmare on Elm Street 4 is coming out, 3 is coming out at that point, and he's like, everything's getting so silly, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2, in that regard, is also a very silly parody of what the slasher genre had become.
Yeah, and on top of that,
especially towards
Chop Top Mosley is the greatest horror character ever.
And I'll do some brief politics before I close off here. This, and we'll continue this discussion next week. There is a good book. Around this time, the book Men, Women, and Chainsaws came out. That's in the late 80s, no, the early 90s. And that was a study of not just slasher films, but the first chapter about it is on slasher films and gender dynamics. And I do think that I disagree with some of its stuff that it says.
Okay.
But it does take these films seriously for the first time, and that was also an important thing, because these slasher films came out and they were disregarded as trash. Roger Ebert called Friday the 13th Part 4 a morally reprehensible piece of garbage. And
they were those days Marvel movies. Oh, in the eye of the public.
Kind of. I wouldn't go that harsh on them. But point is that Men, Women, and Chainsaws does dissect these films through a modern feminist lens, and it doesn't come out all positive. It's not a glowing endearment of slasher films, but she does hearken on the fact that a predominantly male audience was sympathizing with movies that had predominantly female leads.
Yeah.
And she goes to some extensions on this that I think are kind of dated, and she says some things about, like, point is, there's a lot going on here with gender dynamics in the terms of this final girl chasing from the man and overcoming it. And in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, they play on that as well a lot, because one common interpretation of slasher films is that the knife is a phallus, which I mentioned in Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gets a little taken out of context two times, because literally anything sharp is going to be a phallus. And I don't think every single knife... I'm a huge woke guy, guys, but I do think that sometimes we gotta reel it in. But it's funny, because in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, it's literal.
It's
Leatherface, his chainsaw is an extension of his phallus, and I won't say why on air, but if you watch that film, you know what I mean. And it's just really funny that Tobe Hooper was aware of that, and he just took it to the nth degree and made it really funny.
Oh, shoot.
Anyways, I'm rambling way past my time. I got two very short songs for you. I got When You Got Drafted by the Dead Kennedys and American by the Descendants. See you guys in a little bit.
Make you a spy! Forget your demonstration, kids are dancing on the
rear.
Just a six-pack and you're happy, we're prepared for when you get drafted, when you get drafted!
We flipped our finger to the King of England. Stole our country from the Indians. With God on our side and guns in our hand, took it for our own. Built a nation dedicated to liberty, justice and equality. Doesn't look that way to you, it doesn't look that way to me. Sickest joke I know. Listen up, man, I'll tell you who I am. Just another stupid American. You don't wanna listen, you don't wanna understand. So finish up your drink and go home. I come from the land of Ben.
Hello, welcome back, everyone.
Hello.
That was American by the Descendants and When You Get Drafted by the Dead Kennedys. And we're back and we're talking more about economics. This is an economics radio show.
Yeah, we talk about the economy. Tariffs.
China pays for tariffs.
We talk about tariffs. We talk about big money, big buy.
Big oil.
Big oil fracking.
I invested all of my stock into fracking. And tearing down the Amazon rainforest.
I actually decided I will never talk about anything other than
I'm
fracking.
Actually sending more bullets to shoot more elephants in Africa.
Yeah, yeah. I'm
actually a huge ivory investor.
Yeah, the only thing I'll ever talk about ever again is fracking. I have just dedicated my life to it. But besides that, I will also be talking about my new one-time-only segment. Sage talks about Alien for way too long because he loves it. So,
okay.
I wanted to add on in the beginning of this segment to the 80s. So
that's a 70s film.
No, hold on. Aliens.
Oh, Aliens.
Aliens.
Oh, Alien. Okay, yeah, no, Aliens is an 80s film.
So
that's a very pinnacle, like typical 80s, not typical. That is like an
it's a blockbuster.
80s, yeah, it's an 80s blockbuster movie. It's bigger, it's better. It's got more guns.
You know, buff men and buff women.
Yes. No, Aliens is incredible, though.
It is. And I think what's interesting is you talked about the knife being the phallus, right? And yeah. that idea.
Well, the alien is a phallus.
The alien is that. That was one.
H.R. Geiger, he only drew phalluses. He's gone now.
Yeah. And so he, like, the story of the original alien is very much.
I love the word phallus because it is a PG way to say that word. And so I like to say it.
It's a very much a story about being violated and, you know, consent and whatnot.
I think I can say rape on air.
Yeah.
It's a rape film.
It is a rape film, yes.
That's what it is. If we're talking, a serious discussion of that movie, it's a film where someone gets, you know,
impregnated
against their will and forced to give birth against their will. Wink,
and
wonk.
And it kills them too.
Wink, wonk, Ron DeSantis.
Yeah, and so the thing with Alien is that that 70s movie really. It was really like even with the scene with Ash when he's, you know, he's strangling Ripley.
Oh yeah, he shoves a porno magazine in her throat.
Exactly. Like it is really on the nose, and that's why it's amazing. And so Aliens, in the '80s, is kind of a step back. It's not a terrible step back, but it is a step back. We have taken the one on one that was.
I know it's not a big dumb action movie, but it takes a step towards big dumb
action movie. Yeah, and so where the story about rape and, you know, consent and whatnot is there in the original. In Aliens, it's actually a story about motherhood and being a mother. And with Ripley finding Newt and whatnot, and I think that's amazing. I love the shift. I just think identity-wise, it's very different.
Yeah.
Alien and Aliens are related in name and characters only. Very much, basically, their stories are wildly different. They and in fact, the Aliens multimedia franchise. He actually differentiates itself in between Alien and Aliens. So you'll get a book and it will be Aliens something. And then you'll get another book and it'll be Alien something. And those change.
It's given the Alien franchise a bit of an identity crisis.
It has.
Now any Alien film after Aliens is flip-flopping between whether they want to be Alien or Aliens.
Exactly.
Or some breed of both. And I kind of like that.
I think I do.
I like the, you know, I'm a big fan of both tones. If one thing wants to lean more aliens and have colonial marines blasting bugs away, I'm all for that. If it wants to be more of a somber consideration on capitalism and human rights and other things, society, Joker, I'm with that too.
And I think, well, look at the video games. I mean, Alien Isolation is a slow horror
Alien Isolation
game.
Versus Alien vs. Predator 2000, which is on Steam for $4.
I own it on Steam as well.
The one where the low poly one where you fly around at like 20,000 miles per hour shooting, sliding everywhere. I love that game.
Yeah, so you look at like Aliens vs. Predator and Aliens Fireteam Elite, Aliens Colonial Marines, as opposed to Alien Isolation. This identity changes.
Do think I slightly prefer the tone of Alien more.
I do as well.
It's a bit more mature and interesting. But Aliens is always fun, you know? It's like, you know, you can have your dessert after your main meal.
Mm-hmm. And I really like all of that. And so what I wanted to talk about is this kind of leads into movie news. So
we're doing movie news again?
Well, for
it's
this
back.
Thing,
it's back from the dead.
It's back from the dead for a limited time only. The revival that will get canceled after its first season. Movie news.
Just like Family Guy.
Mm-hmm.
Family Guy got canceled once.
That's amazing.
So what's going on in the world of
this ties into the Alien stuff. So originally they had announced Alien Earth, a TV series set in the Alien universe. And this angered many Alien fans as they announced that Alien Earth would take place before Prometheus and Covenant. And it feature xenomorphs, which, if you know the timeline, makes zero sense. Even though Prometheus and Covenant aren't the greatest, there is an established timeline, and they're basically considering those two films non-canon, but also canon. So,
not good.
So everybody, I myself, a part of the massive Alien fandom, was not happy with Alien Earth erasing these two not great films that I still like.
I don't like them. I'm fine if they're gone.
I like Prometheus, and I think Covenant is a lot of fun. It's just not a good movie. And so I was upset. I didn't want them to do it.
And then they released a trailer yesterday, and they announced that they scrapped the original plan for it to take place before Prometheus and Covenant, and it actually takes place 2 years before the original Alien film, in 2120, whereas...
That's what you nerds did.
In 2120, Alien Earth takes place, and in 2122, Alien takes place.
Almost had something good. Almost had no Prometheus canon.
So
we almost had it all.
So,
I don't like the idea of the aliens being created by someone else. They should just be aliens.
I love it. I'm a sucker for it. But
I like the mystery, the mystique of the xenomorph. I don't like knowing.
I'm glad that we got an explanation, but I think the
explanation needs to be a mysterious explanation. Kind of like Hellraiser 2, how it gives you a lot of answers to what the Cenobites are, but it's also doesn't take away the mystery of them. You're left with even more questions after Hellraiser 2.
Oh, I definitely would have preferred
and
that.
And Prometheus, it just felt anticlimactic to me, the answer that, like, oh, they're just created by these weird guys.
Well, I wanted
the mystery of them still to feel real.
I think if it was only Prometheus, there would still be a lot of questions open.
I don't know, there's still questions, but I don't know what it is. It's one of, because that I think the best example of what I love is when they first get on the derelict ship on LV-426 in the first movie, and they find the space jockey, and it's just like what the fuck is what the heck is that? And it makes the universe around them that these characters are exploring stranded in space, it makes the whole universe feel creepy and, like, weird and odd. And then, I don't know, I didn't get that vibe from Prometheus.
I think, personally, I prefer Alien timeline post-Romulus. I prefer wherever Romulus takes place, I like that stuff. Where the Colonial...
I haven't watched it yet, still.
Okay, well, where Colonial... You're going to have a lot of problems with it, but... Where the Colonial Marines are rising and Weyland Yutani is still in power and whatnot. I really like all that. I'm not saying I love Prometheus and Covenant. Far from it. They're just okay films, and I like them. If they were considered non-canon, I'd be upset, but also, like, it's Prometheus and Covenant. I'm not losing much. I just think that Alien Earth is supposed to be more tonally in line with Alien than Prometheus and Covenant. And it's directed by Noah Hawley, who did the Fargo TV show.
Yeah.
And so this could be good. And I'm excited. I just think that the Alien franchise, for all its ups and downs, is really fun. And we will... And they're already working on an Alien versus Predator movie. A new
Yay.
One. So far on the list for Alien versus Predator, it will be have two directors, one and two cuts, an Alien cut and a Predator cut.
That'll be fun.
Each directed by Fede Alvarez and Dan Trachtenberg. Dan Trachtenberg, who runs the Predator franchise, Fede Alvarez, who's the new head of the Alien franchise.
Yes.
So
fun.
So
fun
all of that stuff.
Look forward to.
Very fun stuff.
I like Alien. I think it's scary.
And quickly, the new Predator movie, Predator Badlands, is out. The news about it is out. It's coming out next year. And the main character of the movie is the Predator. You follow the Predator.
That's fun.
No humans. Well, humans, but not the main character.
That'll be cool. That's different.
So I'm excited for
that. I think the Predator, I'm like, the future of the Alien franchise has me so, like, ups and downs and weary, and I was like, I don't know. But the Predator franchise, mm-hmm. So shockingly, because really that's the one that was kind of the underdog of the two. But now after Prey, it's like, He's killing it.
They're doing great.
And Predators is really good too. There was the Predator.
That one's bad.
That was a really bad oopsies. But
the autism subplot.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But with Prey came back, and Predators came out, and it's like, we're so back. Then the Predator came out, and it's like, we're so over. It's so over.
And then Prey came back, and we're so back. And so we're getting an animated Predator anthology film next year, and Predator Badlands.
Fun news for Predator, concerning news for Alien. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Yep.
This was Frankenstein's On Air on Hawk Radio, the official radio station of Hillsborough Community College, live from Ybor City, and we'll be back this time next week. See you guys.
See ya. Bye.